Good evening and welcome to this live telephone town hall meeting with Senator Andy Billig, Representative Tim Ormsby, and Representative Marcus Riccelli. My name is Billy and I'll be moderating tonight's call. We're calling you live from the state capitol to give you an opportunity to ask your elected representative any questions you might have on issues like the state budget, education, jobs, transportation, or anything else that's on your mind. If you have a question for your lawmakers, all you need to do is press star 3 on your phone, and we'll connect you with a staff person who will place you in the question queue. Pressing star 3 right now is all you need to do to ask your elected officials a question on tonight's call. Again, this is a live telephone town hall. We're calling you tonight because you are a registered voter in the 3rd Legislative District, and Senator Billig and Representatives Ormsby and Riccelli want to hear from you on the issues that you're concerned about. We'd like to get to as many questions as possible, so again, press star 3 if you'd like to ask a question. Now I'll turn it over to your lawmakers for some opening remarks.
Great. Well, welcome. My name is Andy Billig, your state senator from the 3rd Legislative District in Spokane, and I just appreciate that you're taking a few minutes to listen and hopefully share some thoughts with us, because we do our job best when we hear from the citizens that we represent. Just quickly on some of the areas that I've worked on, I work a lot in on education issues. Also, been working this session on election transparency, campaign finance transparency, voter access, and of course we work on all of the issues that are important to the community. Very broad, diverse range of issues. My background is that I've run the Spokane Indians baseball team for the last 21 years. I'm part owner of the Indians, and taking that experience and the experience of being a father of my daughter Bella, who's now in 8th grade, and brought that to our citizen legislature to work on your behalf. So I'm looking forward to hearing from you, and thanks again for the time you've taken to join us here.
Hi, everybody. This is State Representative Marcus Riccelli. I'm in my second year here. I'm the Vice Chair of the Healthcare Committee, Capital Budget Committee, and I work on the Transportation Committee. I just want to thank you all for actively engaging in the democratic process. You're all my bosses, and I work for all 137,226 of you. I look forward to our dialogue this evening, and it is truly a great honor to serve you all.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Tim Ormsby. I serve with both Senator Billig and Representative Riccelli. And I just want to say what a privilege and honor it is to serve the 3rd Legislative District and the hardworking folks in our district in Spokane. And I'm thrilled that you could join us. And I'm also thrilled to be working with these two gentlemen that you heard from earlier. I think we have a team approach, a strong team approach to this, and have a good division of labor and our roles and responsibilities so that we can look out for the things that matter most to the folks back home. And now I think we're ready to maybe answer some of your questions.
We are ready. And as a reminder, folks, if you would like to ask a question of your lawmakers, go ahead and press star 3 on your phone now. First, we're going to talk to Angela. Angela has a question about healthcare. Angela, you're on the line.
Hi, guys. I know both of you. I work at Valley Hospital. I'm a registered nurse there. And as you both know, the nurses and healthcare workers at Valley and Deaconess went on strike over state staffing levels last month. And we're trying to get a law to hold the healthcare provider in this state accountable. Last year, House Bill 1095 was introduced and would allow the Department of Health to set mandatory state staffing levels. Can you guys fill us in on where that is in the legislation? Where it may be headed this year?
Yeah, thank you, Angela, and thank you for your question. Staffing ratios are important. You know, I think we want folks to be able to be taken care of in a safe manner. That's important to all of us, and I was pleased to be out there as you guys were calling for that on the line, and I'll continue to work to see that bill move forward. The status is this. Last year, we did pass that out of the Healthcare Committee. It did not receive a vote on the floor. I know there's many members in the House Democrat caucus that would like to push for that and continue to see that there are mandatory safe staffing ratios. So I'll continue to work alongside you and the healthcare workforce to make sure that we're providing folks with, you know, safe environment to be taken care of. Because I know you guys didn't get into that, to nursing to get rich. You got into it to help people.
And thanks for the question, Angela. And I just wanted to say we've banked on the healthcare industry in our community, and we've banked on it because of the value that it brings, the opportunities for jobs, and they have to be jobs worth having, and they have to be jobs worth keeping. And in order to make sure that our healthcare workforce is not overworked and that they're providing quality care all the time that they're there, we need to manage those ratios, and we're here in support of you and our healthcare workforce and our local healthcare economy.
All right. Thank you, Representative Ormsby. And as a reminder, you are on the line with your third legislative district lawmaker, Senator Andy Billig, Representative Marcus Riccelli, and Representative Tim Ormsby. If you would like to ask a question, go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next, we're going to talk to Rosemary. Rosemary has a question about transportation.
Hi, Andy, Tim, and Marcus. Hi, Andy, Tim, and Marcus. Good to hear from you. I am concerned about if there are any plans in the near future or near distant future regarding a rapid mass transit between the east and west sides of Washington State. It seems like it would be helpful for those of us who travel those areas more frequently rather than spending, you know, so much time on the road or trying to afford a plane ride. My second question is the state doing anything to support alternative forms of transportation, for example, bicycling in the local communities?
Great. Well, this is Andy Billig. Thanks, Rosemary, so much for those questions. That's great. So the east-west question, we hear about that a lot. And, of course, we travel from our homes in Spokane to Olympia many times each year, so we are particularly sensitive to that one. When I first got here, it was an issue that I pursued and talked to some of the rail experts about how we might do that. And the cost is just so significant to build it, and the projections of what the recovery cost would be from fares is just not real high. So it's something I'm not ready to give up on, but I don't want to give you any false hope. I think it's way in the future if it does happen. The other question on the alternative transportation, absolutely. Tim talked about us being a team. We're a team. A lot of times we divvy up things, but smart transportation solutions is something that we all work on because we believe in it. There's one of the programs, the Safe Routes to School program, we've made some great progress in the last couple of years. We've been able to get grants in Spokane, but and statewide, we've been able to really grow the access there. So I'd say it's a priority, but we still have a long way to go there.
Yeah, and I just add thanks, Rosemary, for the question. This is Representative Marcus Riccelli. You know, we do work as a team, and we're pushing for the Central City Line to move that forward. There was some money for design in last year's budget, and we want to see that project move forward along with others. And we should say that Andy's been a real leader in the Safe Route to Schools program, which is, to his credit, he came in and hit the ground running.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. Next, we're going to talk to Denise. Denise has a question about the state budget. Denise, you're on the line.
Hi, gentlemen. I would like to ask the question of, as a disabled state employee and also the wife of a state employee who served 30 years plus, I'd like to know why the state employees seem to bear the brunt of carrying the budget cuts. And at the same time, the legislature gives itself raises.
Hi, Denise. This is Tim Ormsby, and I want to address the first part of your question, which is about our state workforce. And let me just say, I'm very proud of our state workers and the work they do. And I think that folks get into that business to serve people and not to get wealthy. And I will say that there have been cuts to state employees, both in the number of employees that we've had, and the state employees agreed during the really bad recent recession that they would not only, bear more of their health care costs, but would also take a slight pay decrease. And we need to make that up. And although the economy is improving, we're kind of treading water as far as the amount of money that's coming in and the amount that
that we can really pay our state employees, our very hardworking state employees, what they deserve. And I think we're trying to hold the line to make sure that those benefits are maintained and that we can actually recruit and retrain qualified people to represent us in our state agencies. And I just wanted to clarify what could be perceived. It's a misconception that the state legislature is getting pay raises. The state legislature, we haven't got a pay raise since 2008, very much like the state, very similar situation as the state employees. And I think that we wanted to go through and have the same experiences as far as our compensation that our state workers are. I know that the three of us are trying to hold the line to make sure that compensation and benefits are adequate and that they are match what folks are getting in the private sector.
All right. Thank you, Representative Ormsby. And as a reminder, you are on the line with your third Legislative District lawmakers. If you would like to ask them a question, go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next, we're going to talk to Meg. Meg has a question about oil drains. Meg, you're on the line.
Thank you. This really is for all three of you. With the oil drains coming from North Dakota to the West Coast, they'll be coming directly through downtown Spokane. And I think that is a risk that is just too big to take. And I know that the railroads are regulated by the feds, and that is a complicating factor. But I'm wondering if you couldn't perhaps work with our state senators and with our United States senators and the city council and see if it isn't possible to have a spur that could be built around, for instance, south of the city of Spokane, so that so many people are and buildings are not at such a risk from those trains. They've spilled so many. I read that in last year there was over 1 million gallons of oil that were spilled. And it's not the flammable stuff that is coming from North Dakota right now. It's more stable. And I just think that it's just too big a risk to take to have those trains coming through Spokane.
Well,
and I don't know what you know can do all about it.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Meg. That is really an important issue and one that's really come on our radar here in the last year or so. We've been certainly monitoring the coal trains and have concerns about those. So the oil trains are a whole other level of immediate concern because of the flammability and the toxicity if there were a spill. And we've seen, unfortunately, in other communities that it can be extremely dangerous. So the idea of a spur is actually one I had not heard before. So I think that is a great idea to pursue. I mean, certainly there would be a significant cost to it, but, you know, that's there's going to be a huge cost if there's an accident. So I'm going to take that idea and do a little research on it. I will say that we have taken some action so far this year in the legislative session. There's two bills, they're companion bills, so they're identical, but House Bill 2347 and Senate Bill 6262, which look specifically at safety, rail and marine safety for oil transport and what we can do to make sure that there's disclosure and coordination so that we can prevent accidents and then have coordination if there was accidents. So you might want to follow those bills. And I just want to say it's an issue that we're definitely concerned about and working on actively this session. So thank you.
All right. Thank you.
This is Representative Shelley. I just wanted to add, you know, and I was proud to co-sponsor Representative Farrell's bill, HB 2347. So.
All right. Thank you, Representative Richelli and Senator Billig. As a reminder, folks, you are on the line with your third LD lawmakers. If you want to ask a question, go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next, we are going to talk to Lonnie. Lonnie has a question about health care.
Hello. This is Reverend Lonnie Mitchell over here in Spokane. And just want to ask a question here. How is the affordable health care law being sort of implemented in this legislative session? And is there any initiative to reach out to people of color?
Thank you, Pastor Mitchell. This is Representative Richelli, and hope everything is going well at the Emanuel Life Center. You know that our third district team was proud to help with a capital budget request last year, and we hope that that's moving along and is a good project. On the Affordable Care Act, I'm honored to be serving as the Vice Chair of the Healthcare Committee. It's a recent appointment, and a lot of folks don't realize that over 74,000 folks in Spokane County are uninsured. With the Medicaid expansion that the state took part in, we brought in line another 26,000 residents of Spokane County who have access to affordable, quality health care. But we need to do better. You know, we have navigators on the ground who we have folks who can call into the exchange, and we need to sign more folks up. And specifically, in reaching out, I have visited the call center in Spokane Valley, and there are folks who are bilingual working there, reaching out statewide to make sure that we're making inroads to communities of color. But I think we all agree we need to do more. We want to see more people signed up. We want to see more folks on Medicaid and more people have access on the exchange to affordable, quality health care.
Yeah, and Pastor Mitchell, just great to hear from you, and just wanted to thank you for your efforts on behalf of our community and for staying in touch with us to help us to better serve our entire community. Thank you.
That goes for me too, Ronnie. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you. Next, we're going to talk to Georgia. Georgia has a question about jobs. Georgia, you're on the line.
Yes. Thank you, gentlemen, for the phone call this evening. How do you plan on increasing the employment opportunities in the 3rd District?
Hi, Georgia. This is Tim Ormsby, and I think there's a lot of strategies that we employ here at state government. I want to talk about the things that the state does, and I would invite my friends and colleagues to add their thoughts. So we do a lot of jobs by state investments. We do it through the capital budget that Marcus sits on, which is when we drive money out to build schools and higher ed facilities and make improvements in our communities like community centers. Marcus just mentioned the capital budget appropriation that went to the Manual Life Center to make it safe for kids to be there after school. So we do things directly like that, and we also do things through transportation and other infrastructure investments, and we also try to do it through education and driving policy out, and I would just invite Marcus and Andy to talk about those things more specifically.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things with transportation I see, you know, it really creates jobs in two ways, with a short term with construction jobs, but really, and we hear this over and over and over from business owners, is transportation is the backbone. It is the foundation of our economic success. And so that's one of the reasons we've been pushing so hard for a transportation investment package so that we can create those short-term construction jobs but also have that basis for the long-term growth. And we haven't made enough progress on getting a transportation investment package, but we're continuing to work on it.
And I would just add that, you know, we need to focus on key sectors. A lot of folks don't realize that we're actually a hub for aerospace. We're banking our future, as Representative Ormsby said, on the healthcare sector. And we need to continue to move forward through education at all levels, K-12, and we need to make higher education more affordable and accessible, make opportunities for people to go to vocational and technical school so that we have a trained workforce to compete in the global economy. And I think there's a lot of good things going on that we're working on here, and we're going to continue to do so to make sure that 3rd District residents have opportunities to grow the middle class from the middle out.
All right. Thank you, guys. And if you're just joining us on the call tonight, you are talking to your 3rd Legislative District lawmakers, Senator Andy Billig, Representative Marcus Riccelli, and Representative Tim Ormsby. Next, we are going to talk to Mike. Mike has a question about transportation. Mike, you're on the line.
Hi, this is Mike back here in Spokane. I'm kind of new here in the Spokane area, approximately 10 years. And my question is, and thank you so much for this getting together with the different legislatures here. I think it's a wonderful idea. Appreciate it. And my question is the North-South Freeway. And I understand that's been kind of in the works for something like 40-plus years. And I guess my question is, how can we get funding to complete this, which I know it's a big project, but 40-plus years seems a little ridiculous. It seems like the Seattle, as you know, area gets all the money for various highway projects, and I know that they have the population, but we need that north-south freeway here desperately. I mean, to get heavy trucks off of Division Street would be a blessing. So I'll take a step back and listen to you guys.
Thanks, Mike. This is Representative Bricelli. We absolutely need to complete the North Spokane corridor. We are all pushing here strongly for a $750 million a transportation package that would include $750 million. And, you know, yes, I agree. We need to complete that project. I'm tired of giving speeches on the House floor about a project that was built proposed many years before I was even born. So I 100% agree. And I was in a room of business leaders today from Spokane who came over, I think about 80 to 100, and asked them to raise their hand because we've been hearing a lot about polling information on who supports it and not. And every single hand in the room went up when asked if they would support a package that would include North Spokane Corridor. And it doesn't just complete that project. It reduces emissions, and it puts people to work, like Representative Ormsby mentioned earlier.
Just one thing I'll add. I mean, really, the holdup and then the concern is that there's a gas tax on that. And, you know, you got to look, you know, ideally we would have no taxes and we just have great infrastructure and great services, but that's not reality. So the reality is we're going to have to invest, but we're in a very anti-tax climate. And so while the three of us have committed to voting for a package of tax, if this, you know, included appropriate investment for our region, that's a tough hurdle to get over because of this anti-tax climate. And we need, and I think you certainly seem like you want to get this done, and I think it's one of the ways that we can use sort of a town hall meeting like this is to say, if we want to get these things done as a community, we have to be able to invest as a community. And when I say invest, I'm saying taxes. And that's the reality. And taxes become a bad word, and we just got to get comfortable and say taxes is how we come together as a community to invest in our future.
And I just wanted to say, I think Mike has been more like 50 years, and this is Tim Ormsby, and so since I'm the only one of the three of us been around that long, I can say that at least it was conceived in my lifetime. But we've made serious advances in getting the, you know, the initial projects done and getting the infrastructure in place, bridges and a little bit, and now we just we have to sprint down the back stretch here and get it taken care of.
All right. Thank you, Tim, Andy, and Marcus. And folks, if you have questions about the state budget, about transportation, about education, go ahead and press *3 now to talk to your lawmakers. Next, we're going to talk to Doug. Doug, you're on the line.
Yeah, thank you. My concern is as a small business owner here in the city of Spokane, I keep hearing these rumors of $11 and $12 and $15 minimum wages. And my type of business is a stepping stone for young people to move on to a career. And you guys keep pushing to increase this minimum wage. You're basically I'm gonna lose four employees right off the get-go at my business if things like this keep happening. Because I can't afford to pay my type of a business. Is, like I say, a stepping stone. Kids that are in high school, coming out of high school, maybe just starting college, going to community college, and you guys are wanting me to pay these guys $11, $12, $15 an hour, and it's not their career at my business. It's just a stepping stone to get to a career. I'd like to hear your...
Hi, Doug. This is Tim Ormsby. And, you know, the minimum wage discussion is happening in Washington State. It's happening nationally. And I'm not sure what business it is that the small business and industry that you have, Doug. And I know that that's a concern, but I want to kind of share some, I want to dispel some myth about that. And I absolutely do not challenge the fact that in your business that these are young folks that are in a stepping stone situation, you know, to move on, to develop a work ethic and move on to other jobs when they get older. I absolutely believe that. But I would just say 88% of minimum wage earners are over 20 years old. So this is not necessarily teenage workers. And I think we have to have an honest and rigorous conversation about what people make. Now, at the low end of the economic scale, these folks are not taking their wages and, you know, padding their stock portfolio or making investments there, spending whatever it is they make in the community in which they make it. They're paying rent, they're buying food and shoes for the kids and stuff like that. And one of the stark realities of the economy that we have right now is 70% of our economy is based on consumption. There used to be a lot more like manufacturing and a lot of other ways that people made living, and anymore it's about consumer spending. And if we don't have enough consumers spending enough money, then we're kind of put ourselves in an economic tailspin. I think it's time that we had a national and a state conversation about this. And I would say there would probably be some legislation floating around Olympia this year. It won't be at the $15 an hour like was passed in SeaTac, Washington. But I think we should have conversations about difficult things and see what conclusions we can come to and what information we learn so we can move forward.
Yes, yeah, Doug, thanks for the question. One thing I'll add is you were talking about us, and I assume you mean the legislature, raising the minimum wage. And just want to point out that the minimum wage increases that have happened have been as a result of the voters through the initiative process voting. Majority of the public in Washington State voting in favor of a raise, and part of that initiative was to have an increase according to the consumer price index. Basically, you know, as inflation happens, the minimum wage will keep up with inflation. And, you know, I'm a co-owner of a business that hires minimum wage employees. We've got, you know, high school kids that work in the summer. They're seasonal part-time employees. So, I mean, I'm sensitive to what you're saying, but I also know one of the reasons I supported the initiative when it happened and is that if people don't have the money to buy the products for our company or for other companies, then it's going to be very hard to keep those jobs at any level.
All right. Thank you, Senator Billy. As a reminder, one last time, folks, if you want to ask a question of your representative and your senator, go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next, we're going to talk to Mandy. Mandy has a question about education. Mandy, you're on the line.
Hi, I work with the youth. Hi, I work with the Youth Build Program in Spokane, and I work with 20 to 24 year old low-income young adults without a high school diploma or GED. In our program, we help them get their GED, and it's a gateway to apprenticeships and colleges. But the new GED test is almost impossible to pass, and there's no curriculum available. The teachers that present it are having trouble passing the standards, and I'm really worried that my group of students aren't going to be able to get through this gateway.
Hi, Mandy. This is Tim Ormsby, and I share your concern, and this was not something that I was aware of, frankly. I do know that as far as the GED is actually like a, it's a company, it's a product that you buy, and we're not sure that we're going to be utilizing this company, this product, GED, any longer. And I know my colleagues, Andy particularly, has more information. Maybe he can chime in about that. My sympathy towards what your young folks are going through is a problem that I share your frustration and brought that frustration to me to Olympia, which is that we need to value people with hands-on skills, not just folks that are going to get a bachelor's degree or a post-baccalaureate, master's or doctorate. Although those are important things to have, we need folks that, you know, get out there with a good work ethic, you know, put on their boots and their nail bags and go build stuff and do those things through the process that you're doing and through apprenticeship. And just want to remind everybody that, you know, there's more than one way to get an education, and apprenticeships and this hands-on stuff that you're doing, Mandy, with the Youth Build thing, I applaud you. You deserve a lot of credit for giving folks an opportunity for a career.
All right, moving on here, we're going to talk to Glennis. Glennis has a question about dental. Glennis, you're on the line.
Yes, I participated in a town hall phone call several months ago, and the focus of that phone call was dental health and the importance of it. And I just wondered, it is so important for quality of life and quality of health. It's just something that everyone can relate to and is very necessary. I was just wondering if anyone had anything going on along those lines, or what progress is that taking?
Thank you so much for the question. This is Representative Rochelli. Yeah, there are a few things going on in the legislature right now. One, in healthcare committee, we're looking at, as folks come on the exchange, what's called embedded dental, and trying to figure out if that's the way to get more folks enrolled in quality dental programs. Dental access is a huge issue, and before I even came to the legislature, I heard from constituents in Spokane that life-threatening problems because they did not have dental access or could not afford the procedures. And now that I have two little ones at home, you realize the connection between overall health and dental access. We were proud last year to bring back adult dental. I think that was a major move forward and something that was a commitment from your legislators to make sure that folks in Spokane and all across our state could have better access.
All right. Thank you, Representative Rochelli. And I know I'm a broken record here, but if you'd like to ask your lawmakers a question, you can go ahead and press *3 on your phone. Next, we're going to talk to Jerry. Jerry has a question about unemployment. Jerry, you're on the line.
Yeah, this is Jerry.
Yep.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, I was wondering about unemployment and our people, that's, basically on the streets, and what we can do about that.
Hey, Jerry, this is
Holman.
Yeah, no, I think unemployment is one of those things that we do to provide, a safety net for folks. So I come out of the construction industry, Jerry, we're lucky if we work 9 months out of the year just because the weather is difficult there. And given this great recession that we've gone through, the need to be able to supply a safety net for folks so that they can, continue to have a house to live in, feed their families, and be able to interact in the economy with groceries and all the rest of it. One thing that we're a little bit at the mercy of here at the state level is the federal government and whether or not, they're going to continue to give us some of these unemployment, emergency unemployment extensions because, frankly, the economy may be recovering on Wall Street, but it's not recovering in a way that's really helpful for people to land jobs that were, anywhere near the level of income that they were able to do just in the last few years. As far as the social issues go, as far as people being on the street, certainly if we don't have some of this stuff, that's where people are going to end up. But, if they find themselves in difficult situations, been out of work for a long time, and maybe their unemployment benefits have expired, we need to look to other social safety net programs to make sure that those folks have adequate food, housing, and health care.
And I think it goes back to the jobs issue about us. What can we do as a community, as a state, to make sure that the jobs are there so that those people that want to work can, and not just work, but work in a job with dignity and to make a living wage. And I think we answered that in an earlier question about some of the things we're working on, but we'll keep focused on that because ultimately, unemployment insurance is incredibly important for that safety net, but the best solution in the long term will be to make sure that there's enough good living wage jobs there for people to get back on their feet.
All right. Thank you, guys. And if you're just joining us, you are online with Senator Billig, Representative Rochelli, and Representative Ormsby. Next, we are going to talk to Darren. Darren has a question about a fuel pipeline. Darren?
Yeah. Everybody's so concerned about the railway and the boxcars and the tip over of oil and explosions. We have pipelines of natural gas going from the coast all the way here to Spokane, all the way to Montana and North Dakota. Why do we need another railway when we already have an infrastructure that will support another pipeline to deliver a constant flow more than that of a rail car. Why has that not been looked into or approved? When the expense of railroad outweighs the hazards, where a pipeline is a lot more inexpensive for the companies like Exxon, Shell, Mobil, and all these other oil companies who would be more than glad to invest and do the research and get those up and running right down our natural gas lines, which already stretch from east to west right across our aquifer and everything else. Why is that that we're looking at a railroad car taking the oil and not a pipeline?
Good. Thank you. And, you know, I'm glad we've gotten two questions that sort of related to this because it is certainly a pressing issue and a really emerging issue that we need to evaluate and be vigilant on. I think one of the things on pipelines, you know, these are private companies that are doing this work. So it's a private railroad that has decided to truck oil by rail, and it's, you know, private companies that then could decide it's more cost-effective to do a pipeline. Certainly there's government interaction about, you know, is it responsible and safe the way they put the pipeline in or the way that they transport oil on the rail. But ultimately, and it's a great thing about being a free market economy, it's, you know, what that private company decides is the most efficient way to do it is probably the path they're going to take. But I think you bring up a good point, and I'm certainly going to mention that as I talk to some of the oil companies. One of the things is that the railways, I mean, we're talking about maybe doing a spur would be a safety option, but the railways are already there. So in terms of immediate access of moving the oil, I think that's probably one of the reasons the companies are looking at rail. And I think you may have indicated this, but just to point out, there is not an oil pipeline from Spokane to the West Coast. That's one of the reasons people are using rail right now. I was surprised as I looked into this to learn that, and it's one of the reasons that the gas prices are so different in Spokane. They're usually quite a bit lower in Spokane than they are on the west side of the state of Washington. The reason is because we get our gas and oil from the east, from Montana, that direction, whereas the west coast gets it north-south on the west coast, so it really comes from a different source. That pipeline's not there right now, but good issue. I appreciate you bringing it up.
All right. Thank you, Senator Billis. Next, we're going to talk to Donna. Donna has a question about medical marijuana. Donna, you're on the line.
Good evening, gentlemen. And, of course, we know each other from working in Olympia together and from working here locally. Real quick, I want to comment to your one caller who had a question about the north-south corridor, that he should connect with his neighborhood councils here in Spokane and get busy locally, and that also can have a great impact on that north-south freeway, as we all know, working with Department of Transportation. I want to ask about medical marijuana. A couple of things that I've been trying to follow what's been going on in Olympia with committee, you know, and thank you for your service there, Marcus, especially. But one of the things that I have been told many times now from some of these coalitions or, you know, and they're competing is that their attorneys are already putting together lawsuits to sue the state because it was stated in the laws when they were passed, that the medical marijuana was not supposed to be touched. And so some of the suits, I guess, are going to be on due process or whatever, but I'm concerned about the extent of the state of those lawsuits and what it does to everybody in the state as far as what is the law when all this is up in the air. As well, I want to share one special concern about this doctor's registry because, as you know, there's a lot of clinics out there. Some of them, you know, are going on very scant records to authorize. But I will tell you this from people I've talked to who have recommendations from long-term serving physicians here in Spokane. Their physicians are telling them no way will they sign it if there's a state registry because it's against the law federally and it puts their federal license at stake. It means that a lot of those people are going to lose their authorization from long-term practicing doctors, and then you close up these authorization clinics too, and pretty soon not only will you have the medical marijuana industry highly taxed and at high prices, but you're not going to be able to get a medical authorization. And so those are my concerns. And again, thank you all three of you for your service.
Thanks, Donna. I'll take a stab. This is Representative Rochelli on medical marijuana. We did hear last week a bill offered by our chair, Representative Cody, heard quite a bit of testimony. And, you know, I believe one of the reasons where folks are interested in at least moving forward with some piece of legislation is provide clarity around some of the law and how medical marijuana plays into the initiative that was passed. There's a ton of moving parts, so I don't know if whatever I offer tonight will glean too much on, you know, what will actually be possibly voted on out of committee in the next couple weeks. But I'll tell you this, there were concerns heard, and one of the things that was being kicked around was the potential for the Liquor Control Board to actually authorize a certain percentage of those licenses to medical marijuana only. Now, this is very preliminary discussion. I think there's a lot of moving parts. We've certainly heard a lot from folks in Spokane, at our town halls, at our coffees. And all I can say right now is I'm going to continue to work to be informed, and I'm happy to communicate what I know. And I think we are having a robust dialogue on how we move forward.
All right. Thank you, Representative Riccioli. And one last time, we're running out of time here, but if you would like to get a question into your lawmakers, go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next, we're going to talk to Mike. Mike, you're on the line.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, gentlemen. First of all, I want to thank you, Tim and Marcus, for early support of the House bill for the cost of living adjustment for teachers, and actually to thank all three of you for what you've done for education. My question, gentlemen, is how realistic will a cost of living adjustment be for teachers in this legislative session?
Yeah, Mike, thank you for calling. And just, we got a Senate version now, too, which is a little more recent, but all 23 members of the Senate Democratic Caucus signed on to the co-sponsor of the COLA bill, so we've got that one as well. But, I think that it has a pretty good chance to get strong consideration. The question is going to be how much money is there to spend, because this is a supplemental budget year, so the state does budgeting and it does a two-year budget. We did that last year. So this year is just a supplemental budget where we make adjustments. But I've heard from both the Senate Democratic Caucus and from the House Democratic Caucus very clearly that this is a priority. And then the governor, who is going to has also indicated that this is a priority for him. So I think we got a chance on it. Just stepping back from the logistics and the chance, I think I just got to say, you know, every child deserves a great teacher. And teachers work hard. They have in mind the most important job in our community, and they deserve raises, but at the very least, they deserve to have their salaries keep up with inflation, so they're not getting pay cuts every year, or relative pay cuts. So I'm going to keep working hard on it. I know Tim and Marcus are committed to it as well.
That's right, Mike. And I just want to reinforce something that Andy said, that has been a challenge, which is, you know, we're not in a tailspin economically anymore, and the state has recovered, but we're certainly not making great headway in having revenue come in, and we're further kind of handcuffed by this outlook that we have to justify being able to make those expenditures, not just in the two-year budget cycle, but it has to pencil out, given our economic forecast modeling, to the biennium that we haven't even gotten to yet. And so we've got some challenges in that regard, but you and all of our great educators in Spokane should know, you know, we're doing everything we can to make sure that cost of living allowance that hasn't happened in many years for our teachers happens this year.
All right. Thank you very much. Next, we're going to talk to Gail. Gail has a question about bridge safety. Gail, you're on the line.
Hi. This is Gail Faith in Spokane, and I want you all to know how much you're appreciated, and we know that it's hard work and sometimes thankless job because you get a lot of criticism, but do appreciate it. I was just reading something about bridge inspections in other states and how deplorable their inspections were, and it makes one wonder if you want to travel and cross bridges in some of those states. So I was wondering, offhand, does anybody know how well Washington stacks up comparatively and how good our bridge inspections are?
Thanks, Gail, for the question. You know, I don't have exact numbers, but what I do know is that we're becoming very reactionary with our transportation dollars. When a bridge collapses, we swoop to action. we need to do better. We need to do more. And that's part of this transportation funding package. And one of the things that doesn't really get mentioned, we talk about the North Spokane Corridor. But the real investment is in our preservation and maintenance of existing resources and infrastructure. And that's getting lost. We need to go back and make sure that we're making sure that those bridges are safe. And we had a pretty luckily not tragic as far as cost to human life, but a pretty eventful year with what happened with the bridge collapse on the west side.
And I just wanted to assure you, Gail, and thanks for calling. This is Jim Ormsby, that we have a robust inspection program in the state, and by comparison, do much better than other states on our maintenance. But, you know, as Marcus mentioned, and we're all acutely aware of, that, you know, if we don't start making these infrastructure improvements, these bridges aren't going to get better as years go on. And we've had local experiences. And there's two distinct kind of grades that we give bridges. One of them is that they're functionally obsolete, and the other is that they're structurally deficient. And the functionally obsolete ones aren't in immediate jeopardy, but the structurally deficient ones, we've got to start fixing them. That was what this whole idea behind the transportation revenue package is, you know, to make sure that Washington State doesn't degrade its infrastructure resources like other states have.
Thank you, Tim. And just a few more minutes left here, folks, but if you'd like to get in line to talk to your representatives, go ahead and press *3 on your phone now. Next, we are going to talk to Jim. Jim, you're on the line.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. You're doing a great job of spending our taxpayer money. I'd like to hear a little bit about how you might save some of our taxes. Boeing just settled their dispute based on the key sticking point was going from a 401 or from a defined benefit to a 401k plan. And most of the real world, that's the private sector here, has been in 401ks since 1986. And I'd like to hear what you guys think about moving state employees from the defined benefit, which was part of the reason Detroit went bankrupt, to a 401k like most real people have. Thank you.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for the question. I've been really wanting to talk about pensions tonight, actually. I spent a good deal of my time on pension policy and pension funding. I want to make a clarification. Detroit did not go bankrupt because they had a defined benefit pension. They went bankrupt because they didn't fund their pension plan. Big difference. Washington State has the fourth best funded pension plan in the United States. We're funded at about 97%. So I want to allay any fears that Washington State does not have an extremely well-funded pension plan. And we have a well-funded pension plan because we make the required contributions. Detroit did not. So let's go to the Boeing contract and them switching from a defined benefit pension to a defined contribution one. I'd like just the real numbers on that, Jim, is that Boeing is contributing 10%, that is, 10% of the wages. If a wage earner has $100, Boeing is contributing $10 on that person's behalf for their pension. The state of Washington contributes $6.50, 6.5%. So Boeing's contributing 10%, state of Washington's contributing 6.5%. I think that the state workers would be thrilled if the state bumped up its contribution by 3.5%. So let's go back to the evolution of 401ks and the popularity. I'm not sure. You mentioned 1986 is when it became the standard for everyone. Well, I know they were created in 1983, and they were created as a tax dodge for corporations that had high earnings. And a way that they could not have to have the tax liability on that was to turn that money into contributions for their employees if they were matched. So we went from a tax dodge in 1983 to the industry standard, and I would just remind folks that the average state employee salary is far below the market, and that we recruit successfully and retain successfully employees because they have a decent benefit package. They're not making a lot of money on their wages, and they're certainly not making a lot of money when they retire. The average state employee has only about an $18,000 annual pension from the state. So I think there's a lot of myths that need to be dispelled, and just saying that we need to go to a defined contribution pension plan for the state is going to solve our problem, that is a myth.
Thank you, Representative Ormsby. Next, we're going to talk to Bonnie about education. Bonnie, you're on the line.
I'm a mother of four, and I have a child that is severely autistic. What I've noticed in the education system for my other children, it's been pretty good. For my son, however, it seems like the budget for education, there's not a whole lot in the special needs department. So I guess my question is, when these kids, they are our future, even the special needs ones, and when they get into a classroom where their only option is either you mainstream it here or you sit in a behavioral classroom, that's just not acceptable to me. So I guess my question is, do you guys have any plans in the future to put in the budget some sort of money to provide some classes for these kids with teachers that have training and can teach them in the way that they need to be taught so they can get an education as well?
Yeah, Bonnie, thank you very much for that question. It's a really important issue, and there's a lot of pieces to an answer here, so I'll try to figure out, I'll just touch on them briefly. One is just you talked about trained people being trained appropriately. That is a real challenge. Oh, sorry, this is Senator Andy Billig. We just heard a bill, had a hearing on a bill in the Senate Education Committee about appropriate training for the paraeducators. So these aren't the certified teachers. These are the paraeducators that are working and do all kinds of things in a school, but they often are the ones doing the day-to-day, hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute work in special needs, with special needs children. And we have dropped the ball on their training, and that is a focus. So we've got efforts underway to help with that, although it's certainly a big project that's going to take a few years. The other thing is just sort of generally, our state constitution is really unique among states. It says that the paramount duty of the state, the top duty of the state, is to provide amply for the basic education of all children within our borders. And I say all children because it doesn't say except for special needs children. It's all children. And we've got an obligation to do that. And as we increase funding overall, as the Supreme Court has properly told us that we need to do better, or some people have said improperly, but they have told us that we are not meeting our constitutional obligation under that paramount duty clause. As we increase overall funding, that's going to help in all areas and special needs as well. So we'll keep working on it, and we realize we need to do better.
All right. Thank you, Senator Billig. That's all the time we have. I'll hand the phone over to your lawmakers for some closing remarks shortly. But first, I want you to know that if you didn't get a chance to ask your question, you can leave a message for your 3rd District legislators at the conclusion of this call. Thanks for joining us tonight. And here are Tim, Andy, and Marcus one last time.
Hi, everyone. This is Tim Ormsby. And thanks so much for joining us and taking time, some of your valuable free time with your families to join us on this Teletown Hall. I just want to say I know I speak for Marcus and Andy as well, just thrilled to be able to represent you all back in the 3rd District, and I would be remiss if I didn't end on the note of the confidence and the appreciation I have for my seatmates and the work that they do and how hard they work on your behalf, and I'm happy to be a part of that team.
Thank you, everybody. This is Representative Marcus Riccelli. Thank you for participating tonight, actively engaging in democracy. This only works the way it's supposed to work if we have you communicating with us. And really, you are my mirror. Where we live in the community. You're our neighbors, our family members. You're the folks that we are here to serve. And you're my mirror, and the test for me is to come back home and run into folks in the grocery store. And, my goal is just to say that, I'm doing my best for you. I'll probably make a couple mistakes here and there, but if we actively engage and have a dialogue, we'll move Spokane forward. We'll move this state forward. And I can't tell you what an honor it is to represent you and represent a community in Spokane. And continue to work hard, and I hope you'll engage. I hope you'll go onto our website, sign up for my newsletter, and communicate. And I just want to say to you, we have a great team here in the 3rd District, and especially I want to do one mention. My teammate Representative Ormsby, I don't think missed a vote in over 10 some odd years, and that's the kind of commitment that you have from him and this whole team here.
Great. And I guess to wrap it up, Andy Billick, state senator here, and just agree with everything that Marcus and Tim said. And I feel very fortunate to have partners and teachers and seatmates in Tim and Marcus that I do, that we work really well together and hopefully are delivering for you because of that teamwork. This only works, and Marcus said I said at the beginning, but we have to get input from you because we work for you, we represent you. So thanks for those that ask questions and for those that listen. Please follow up. I'm going to give you a website, www.leg, which is short for legislature, so leg.wa.gov. And at that website, you can find out all kinds of information, contact information for us, information on bills. And we'll keep doing our best to work for equal opportunity and prosperity for everybody in our community. And please keep in touch. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.